13. Out in dead space, beyond the known system, the creaking GM ore carrier lumbered hesitantly along. In the control bubble, Grove sat listening intently, his dark face rapt. "The flame disk is still far away," the vast presence murmured in his mind. "Don't lose contact with my own ship."
"You're John Preston," Grove said softly.
"I am very old," the voice replied. "I have been here a long time."
"A century and a half," Grove said. "It's hard to believe."
"I have waited here. I knew you would be coming. My ship will hover nearby. You will probably pick up its mass from time to time. If everything goes correctly, I'll be able to guide you to the actual landing on the disk."
"Will you be there?" Groves asked. "Will you meet us?" There was no answer. The voice had faded. He was alone. Groves got unsteadily to his feet and called Conklin. A moment later, both Conklin and Mary Uzik hurried into the control bubble. Giretti loped a few paces behind.
"You heard him," Groves said thickly.
"It was Preston," Mary whispered.
"He must be old as hell," Conklin said. "A little old man waiting out here in space for us to come, waiting for all these years."
"I think we'll get there," Groves said. "Even if they managed to kill Cartwright, we'll still reach the disk."
"What did Cartwright say?" Giretti asked Groves. "Did it perk him up to hear about Preston?"
Groves hesitated.
"Cartwright was preoccupied."
"But surely he—"
"He's about to be murdered."
Groves savagely flicked on the manual controls.
"He hasn't got time to think about anything else."
Nobody said anything for a while.
Finally, Conklin asked, "Has there been any late news?"
"I can't raise Batavia. Military blackout has completely screened out the IPVC lines. I picked up emergency troop movements from the inner planets toward Earth. Directorate wings heading home."
"What's that mean?" Giretti asked.
"Peleg has reached Batavia, and something has gone wrong. Cartwright must have his back to the wall. Somehow the Teep Corps must have failed."
Wakeman shouted frantically.
"Bentley, listen to me. Moore has it rigged. You're being tricked. It's not random."
It was hopeless. No sound carried. Without atmosphere, his voice died in his helmet.
Bentley's thoughts radiated to him, clear and distinct, but there was no way Wakeman could communicate back.
He was boxed in, baffled.
The figure of Keith Peleg and the mind of Ted Bentley were only a few yards from him, and there was no way he could make contact.
Bentley's thoughts were mixed.
"It's Peter Wakeman," he was thinking, "the thief I met in the lounge."
He realized that he was in danger. He was aware of the nearby luminous resort balloon. Wakeman caught an image of Cartwright, the job of killing, and beneath that, Bentley's deep aversion and doubt, his distrust of Varric and his dislike of her more.
Bentley was undecided. For an instant, the thumb gun wavered.
Wakeman scrambled down the ridge onto the level plain. With frantic haste, he sketched vast, crude letters in the ancient dust.
"Moore tricked you. Not random."
Bentley saw the words, and the vapid face of Keith Peleg hardened. Bentley's thoughts congealed.
"What the hell?" he was thinking.
Then he realized that Wakeman was teeping him, that a one-sided conversation was going on with himself as transmitter and the telepath as receiver.
"Go on, Wakeman," Bentley radiated harshly. "What do you mean, tricked?"
In Bentley's mind, there was ironic amusement. He was seeing a telepath, an advanced mutant human, sketching clumsy figures in the dust like some primitive reduced to the most primal means of communication. Wakeman wrote desperately, "Moore will kill you and Cartwright together." Bentley's mind radiated amazement. "What do you mean?" Then suspicion. "This is some kind of strategy. There must be other teeps coming." His thumb gun came quickly up. Bomb! Wakeman, panting for breath, sought a new surface on which to write. But he had written enough. Bentley was filling in the details himself. A phantasmagoria of comprehension, vivid glimpses of his fight with Moore, his sexual relations with Moore's mistress, Eleanor Stevens, Moore's jealousy of him. It flashed through Bentley's mind in bewildering procession, and he lowered the thumb gun. "They're seeing this," Bentley thought. "All the operators at their screens. And Moore, he's seeing it too." Sensing instant danger, Wakeman leaped up and ran clumsily at the Peleg figure, gesturing excitedly, trying to shout across the airless void. He got within 2 feet before Bentley halted him with an ominous wave of his thumb gun. "Stay away from me," Bentley thought grimly. "I'm still not sure of you. You're working for Cartwright." Wakeman scratched frantically. "Peleg set to detonate when close to Cartwright. Moore will switch you in body at moment." "Does Varick know?" Bentley demanded. "Yes." "Eleanor Stevens?" "Yes." Bentley's mind flashed anguish. "How do I know this is true? Prove it." "Examine your body. Locate power leads. Trace circuit to bomb." Bentley's fingers flew as he ripped at the synthetic chest. His mind flashed technical data as he found the main wiring that interlaced the body beneath the artificial layer of skin. He tore loose a whole section of material and probed deep in the humming circuit of the synthetic body as Wakeman crouched a few feet away, heart frozen in his chest, clutching futilely for the good luck charm he had dropped in his office and never retrieved. Bentley was wavering. The last clinging mist of loyalty to Varick was rapidly fading. In its place, hatred and disgust were forming. "So that's the way it's worked," he thought finally. An embryonic strategy flashed through his mind. "All right, Wakeman." His mind hardened. "I'm taking the body back. All the way to Farben." Wakeman sagged. "Thank God," he said out loud. Bentley leaped into activity. Realization that Moore was watching made his fingers a blur of motion as he inspected the reactor and jet controls. And then, without a sound, flashed the synthetic robot and ship up into the black sky, toward Earth. The body had moved almost a quarter mile before Herb Moore sent the selector mechanism twitching. Shatteringly, without warning, Ted Bentley found himself sitting in his chair at Farben, surrounded by his protective ring. On the miniature screen before him, the Peleg body hurtled back downward toward the moon face in a wide arc. It located the suddenly scampering figure of Peter Wakeman and directed its thumb gun. Wakeman saw what was coming. He stopped running and stood, oddly calm and dignified, as the synthetic body dropped low, spun, and then incinerated him. Moore was in control again. Bentley struggled up from his protective ring. He tore loose the wires that ran under his skin, his tongue, into his armpits and ears. In an instant he was at the door of the cubicle, reaching for the heavy steel handle. The door was sealed. He had expected it. Back at the humming banks of machinery, he tore loose a handful of relays. A flashing pop as the main power cable shorted, sending up acrid fumes and throwing the meters to a dead halt. The door fell open, its lock inoperative.
Bentley raced down the hall toward Moore's central lab. On the way, he crashed into a lounging Hill guard. Bentley knocked him down and grabbed the man's popper. He turned the corner and plunged into the lab. Moore lay limp and motionless within his own protective ring. Around him, a group of his technicians were working on the second synthetic body, already partly assembled in the fluid baths suspended over the work tables. None of the technicians was armed. Circling the lab was a honeycomb of chambers, small cubicles in which men sat at screens, eyes fixed intently, bodies supported by identical equipment. A momentary vision of mirror duplications of his own cube, the other operators, and then Bentley broke away. He waved the fluttering technicians back and glanced briefly into Moore's screen. The body hadn't reached the resort balloon. He was in time. Bentley killed the limp, unprotesting body of Herb Moore. The effect on the Peleg body was instantaneous. It gave a convulsive leap that carried it in a spinning trajectory off the lunar surface. The body whirled and darted grotesquely, a crazed thing dancing a furious rhythm of death. Somewhere along the line, as the body swooped and soared, it managed to pull itself out and level off. Moore led the body upward, arced it in a vast sweeping circle, and then shot off for deep space. On the screen, the lunar surface receded. It dwindled and became a ball, then a dot. Then it was gone. The lab doors burst open. Varric and Eleanor Stevens entered quickly.
"What did you do?" Varric demanded hoarsely. "He's gone crazy. He's heading away from..."
He saw the lifeless body of Herb Moore.
"So that's it," he said softly.
Bentley got out of the lab. Fast. Varric didn't try to stop him. He stood aimlessly fumbling at Moore's corpse, his massive face slack and vacant, numbed with shock. Down the descent ramp, Bentley raced. Reaching the ground, he plunged out onto the dark late-evening street. As a group of Farben personnel streamed hesitantly out after him, he entered the illuminated taxi yard and hailed one of the parked Herbtrans ships.
"Where to, sir or madam?"
the Macmillan driver asked, as it slid back its doors and gunned its turbines.
"To Bremen,"
Bentley gasped. He snapped his seat straps in place and quickly slotted his neck against the takeoff impact.
"And make it fast."
The Macmillan's metallic voice sounded in agreement as it operated its jet portions. The small high-speed ship, which was its mechanical body, shot swiftly into the sky, and Farben fell behind.
"Set me down at the big Interplan field," Bentley ordered.
"Do you know any Interplan flight schedules?"
"No, but I can hook you up to an information circuit."
"Forget it," Bentley said. He wondered briefly how much of his conversation with Wakeman had been picked up by the balance of the Corps. Whether he liked it or not, Luna was the only place he stood a chance of safety. All 9 planets were now Hill-operated death traps. Varric would never rest until he had paid him back. But there was no telling what reception he would get from the Directorate. He might be shot on sight as one of Varric's agents. On the other hand, he might be regarded as Cartwright's savior. Where was the synthetic body going?
"Here's the field, sir or madam,"
the driver said to him. The taxi was settling down at the public parking lot. The field was manned by Hill personnel. Bentley could see intercon liners and interplan transports resting here and there, and great hordes of people. Among the people, Hill guards moved around, keeping order. Suddenly, Bentley changed his mind.
"Don't set down. Head back up."
"You name it, sir or madam."
The ship obediently rose. "Isn't there a military field around someplace?"
"The Directorate maintains a small military repair field at Narvik. You want to go there?" "It's forbidden for non-military ships to set down in that area. I'll have to drop you over the side."
"Fine," Bentley said.
That sounds like exactly what I want.
Leon Cartwright was fully awake when the corpsman came running to his quarters.
How far away is he?
Cartwright asked. Even with the injection of sodium pentothal, he had slept only a few hours.
Pretty close, I suppose.
Peter Wakeman is dead, the corpsman said. Cartwright got quickly to his feet.
Who killed him?
The assassin.
Then he's here.
Cartwright yanked out his hand weapon.
What kind of defense can we put up? How did he find me? What happened to the network at Batavia?
Rita O'Neill entered the room, white-faced and quiet.
The core broke down completely. Peleg forced his way directly to the inner fortress and found you were gone.
Cartwright glanced briefly at her, then back at the corpsman.
What happened to your people?
Our strategy failed, the corpsman said simply. Varric had some kind of deception. I think Wakeman had it analyzed before he died.
Rita reacted.
Wakeman's dead?
Peleg got him, Cartwright said curtly.
That cuts us off from the core. We're completely on our own.
He turned to the corpsman.
What's the exact situation? Have you definitely located the assassin?
Our emergency network has collapsed. When Wakeman was killed, we totally lost lock with Peleg. We have no idea where he is. We haven't made any contact whatsoever.
If Peleg has got this far, Cartwright said thoughtfully, we don't have much chance of stopping him.
Wakeman was handling it,
Rita blazed savagely.
You can do much better.
Why?
Because,
she shrugged impatiently,
Wakeman was nothing compared to you. He was a non-entity, a little bureaucrat.
Cartwright showed her his gun.
Remember this? I had this popper in the back seat of the car for years. I never had to use it.
It was still there. I sent a team to get it for me.
He ran his hand down the familiar metal tube.
Sentimental attachment, I suppose.
You're going to defend yourself with that thing?
Rita's black eyes smoldered furiously.
That's all you're going to do?
Right now I'm hungry, Cartwright said mildly. What time is it? We might as well have dinner while we're waiting.
This isn't the time,
Rita began. But at that moment, the corpsman cut her off.
Mr. Cartwright, he interrupted, a ship from Earth is landing. Just a moment.
His attention turned inward, and then he continued.
Major Schaefer is aboard with the remaining corpsman, and,
he broke off,
there's more. He wants to see you immediately.
Fine, Cartwright said.
Where is he?
He'll meet you here. He's coming up the ramp right now.
Cartwright fumbled in his coat pocket for his crumpled pack of cigarettes.
Strange, he said to Rita.
Wakeman dead after all his careful planning.
I'm not sorry for Wakeman. I only wish you'd do something instead of just standing there.
Well, Cartwright said, I can't go anywhere. And we've tried everything we know. There's not a hell of a lot left when you get down to it. I can't help thinking if one man is really determined to kill another, there's not much that can be done to stop him. You can delay him, you can make it hard for him, you can do a lot of intricate things that take up a lot of time and energy. But sooner or later he shows up.
I think I liked you better when you were afraid,
Rita said bitterly. At least I understood that.
Don't you understand this?
You were afraid of death. Now you're not human. You have no emotions.
Maybe you're dead. Might as well be dead.
I'll make a concession, Cartwright said. I'll sit facing the door.
He settled gingerly on the end of a table, his popper in his palm, a dispassionate expression on his face. "What does Peleg look like?" he asked the corpsman. "Young, thin, blonde, no special characteristics." "What kind of weapon is he using?" "He has a thumb gun. That's a heat beam principle. Of course, he may have something more we don't know about." "I want to recognize Peleg when I see him," Cartwright explained to Rita. "He may be the next person through that door." The next person through the door was Major Schaefer. "I brought this man with me," Schaefer explained to Cartwright as he entered the room. "I think you'll want to talk to him." A dark, neatly dressed classified man in his early 30s had entered slightly behind Schaefer. He and Cartwright shook hands as Schaefer briefly introduced them. "This is Ted Bentley," Schaefer said, "a serf of Reese Barracks." "You're a little premature," Cartwright said. "You can go down ramp to the pool and the game room and the bar. The assassin ought to be showing up any time now. It won't be long." Bentley laughed sharply and tensely. He was more rumpled and on edge than they had first realized. "Schaefer is incorrect," he said. "I'm not under oath to Barrack any longer. I left him."
"You broke your oath?" Cartwright asked.
"He broke his oath to me. I left in a considerable hurry. I came here directly from Farben. There were complications."
"He killed her more," Schaefer said.
"Not exactly," Bentley corrected. "I killed his body." Rita's breath caught sharply.
"What happened?"
Bentley explained the situation. When he was perhaps half through, Cartwright interrupted with a question. "Where's Peleg?" "The last we heard, he was around here, somewhere, not more than a few miles from the resort."
"The Peleg body is on its way toward deep space," Bentley said. "Moore isn't interested in you. He's got his own problems. When he realized he was stuck in the synthetic body, he left Luna and headed straight out."
"Headed where?" Cartwright asked.
"I don't know."
"It doesn't matter," Rita said impatiently. "He's not after you, that's what's important. Maybe he went insane. Maybe he's lost control of the body."
"It's possible," Bentley admitted. "It was an event he didn't expect. He had just smashed your teeth net." He explained how Moore destroyed Peter Wakeman.
"We know that," Cartwright said. "What kind of velocity is the synthetic capable of?"
"C+, Bentley answered. "Aren't you satisfied Moore is moving away from here?" Cartwright licked his lips.
"I know where he's going." There was a quick murmur, and then Schaefer said,
"Of course."
He rapidly scanned Cartwright's mind. "He has to find some way to stay alive. Bentley gave me a lot of involuntary material on the way here. I can construct most of the missing parts. Moore will undoubtedly find Preston with the information he has."
Bentley was astounded.
"Preston? Is he alive?"
"That explains the prior informational request," Cartwright said. "Barrack must have tapped the closed circuit ITVIC beam from the ship."
His cigarette came to an end. He dropped it, ground it out wrathfully, and lit another.
"I should have paid more attention when Wakeman brought it up."
"What could you have done?" Schaefer asked.
"Our ship is close to Preston's ship. Moore wouldn't be interested in it, though."
Cartwright shook his head irritably. "Is there any way we can set up a screen to follow Moore?"
"I suppose so," Bentley said. "Ipvic arranged a constant visual beam from the body back to Farben. We could cut into it. It's still being relayed. I know the frequency of the channel."
A thought struck him.
"Harry Tate's under feet to Barrack."
"Everybody seems to be under feet to Barrack,"
Cartwright said. Is there anybody at IPVC we can work with?
Put pressure on Tate. If you cut him off from Varric, he'll cooperate.
He isn't keen on this stuff, according to what Eleanor Stevens told me.
Schaefer looked into his mind with interest. She told you a lot. Since she left us and went to Farben, she's been useful.
Yes, I'd like to keep some kind of a visual check on the Peleg body.
Cartwright fumbled with his popper and finally slid it into a half-unpacked suitcase on the floor.
We're better off now, of course.
Thanks, Bentley.
He nodded vaguely to Bentley.
So, things have changed. Peleg won't be coming here. We don't have to worry about that anymore.
Rita was eyeing Bentley intently.
You didn't break your oath? You don't consider that you're a felon?
I told you, Bentley said, returning her hard stare. Varric broke his oath to me. He released me by betraying me.
There was an uncomfortable silence.
Well, Cartwright said, I still want something to eat. Let's have lunch or dinner or something, and you can explain the rest to us.
He moved toward the door, the ghost of a relieved smile on his tired face.
We have time now. My first assassin is a closed book. We don't have any reason to hurry.